Start your day with Big John and Ray. Now heard weekday mornings 6 till 10 on WLS AM 890.
So welcome back into White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, and with me is the Director of Development, the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Getz. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
What's going on? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Appreciate you hanging out for a few. Let me ask you this, Chris. As we get to the All-Star break, we get to deadlines passing, we get to futures games, and really kind of a solid chunk of baseball to evaluate some talent with. I know a lot of White Sox fans are asking, when does this guy come up? When does this guy come up? And I won't ask you that necessarily, but what's the process like for you as the club starts to decide, whether it's a whomever it is, starts to decide whether a guy's ready to get called up for his first cup of coffee in the big leagues?
Well, it's great now that we're kind of nearing the halfway point, actually past the halfway point on the minor league side. But the body of work's there. You know, sometimes you just get these quick glimpses in spring training, April, May. But now, you know, it's a significant amount of time where you feel like you can get a pretty pretty good evaluation. So when, you know, you kind of reach in a point where, okay, who's ready? When is he ready? You know, we can look back at the things that they've done on the field. And I certainly for me, kind of first time in the organization going through the season here, I'm much more comfortable speaking about some of our players here. But a lot of it is, you know, the timing of things. Obviously, you want to get, you know, the amount of at-bats or innings in AAA or AA if they haven't had them before. And then, you know, if they're under consideration to be called up, you want them to be playing fairly well, so when they come up here, we're putting them in the best position to have success.
Was it for a guy like Yoan Moncada and the injury he had with the thumb earlier in the season, is that maybe, I mean, obviously you don't want guys getting hurt, but is that maybe a little bit of a blessing in disguise in that, you know, he had some time to kind of step back a little bit, heal up some? I think it had been bothering him a little bit before, but he got to struggle a little bit, and Rick Hahn has talked a lot about how struggling in the minor leagues to any kind of degree is a good thing because you have to learn how to deal with that at some point.
I mean, battling through injuries is definitely part of kind of the learning process, and you would much rather do that in the minor leagues than the big leagues. In Yoan's case, you know, sometimes, you know, the silver linings of these kind of nicks and bruises are, you know, you can step back, kind of slow the game down. Okay, what's going on? You're given a little bit more time to kind of self-evaluate as he becomes more of a student of the game, in which he is. He's just a guy that can't get enough and wants to be the best he possibly can. But, yeah, going through that kind of time off and getting back, and then he got a little over-anxious, started expanding the zone a little bit, trying to do too much. But through all of that, you can kind of look back and, you know, learn from it and use it in the future.
We've seen Moncada when he came up with the Red Sox. You know, he played a little third base over there at the major league level. And I just, maybe not with Moncada specifically, but with some other guys that you've got that might, you know, as we go on here, get close to getting called up or be called up for September or what have you. How important is it to the organization, to the White Sox organization, that a guy gets a couple of games, a week of games, 2 weeks of games at a position other than maybe his primary, to give a little bit of, I don't know, versatility to Ricky Renteria once he comes up to the big league level?
You know, it's kind of case to case. You know, some guys are guys that you would, you know, you want to be moving around the diamond, because certainly the flexibility it gives to Renteria is invaluable with being able to get guys rest and continually give guys consistent at-bats. Now, there are cases where, let's say, for example, Moncada, we've got some other guys throughout the organization. Okay, let's really try to refine and maximize defensively, and let's just stick him at second base right now and try to improve him in all areas so he's comfortable there. It's almost like a home base. Okay, over time, possibly, you know, down the road, you start tinkering with some other positions. But I think for the most part, a lot of these guys' cases, you know, it's really just kind of, okay, how does this guy profile? If he profiles as an everyday guy somewhere, okay, mm-hmm. let's try to kind of reach his potential defensively at that particular position and then kind of go from there. But, it, you know, a lot of it you know, a lot of it comes into play is just their overall skill set and how they profile as a future major leaguer.
We're talking with White Sox Director of Player Development, Chris Getz, here on White Sox Weekly. Chris, we went down to, a lot of us actually, the media went down to go see the Knights play in Indianapolis about a month and a half ago or something like that. And I remember having a long discussion with pitching coach Steve McCaddy about Lucas Giolito and just the conversations about, you know, where he was at, not McCaddy, but Giolito with his mechanics and everything and how his season had gone to that point. And McCaddy really kind of hinted that he did think things were close to clicking. I think it was not the start after that, but the next one, Giolito goes out and throws the no-hitter. He'd had a bunch of really good starts in a row. Clunker last time out. But what are the development steps for a guy like Giolito? What have they been like this season to watch from afar, given where he was with the Nationals, how he came back from some injury, and now where he's been after the first month and a half and then the second here with you guys?
You know, once we got Lucas, obviously there's a kind of a getting-to-know process. And then, you know, you obviously you see him in spring training, see him in the beginning of the year, you're building the relationship, the trust, all those types of things, let him go out there and do his thing. You read things, you hear things, you have conversations, but you really got to let him go out there and do his thing. And then kind of, okay, this is something we can add here. This is something we can add here. But in the end of the day, when it came to Lucas, we just needed to simplify things. He was aware of that. We were aware of that. We reached a point where, okay, let's focus on this. Let's focus on that. And then all of a sudden his mechanics, his delivery came to the line. He was able to command his fastball better, land his curveball. His sliders improved, his changeup. He started putting these things together. And I remember that time when you bring up Indianapolis and having conversations with McCaddy, some others. And yeah, I mean, that was that everyone was talking about. We think it's about to kind of turn the corner here and he's going to take off. And he did.
You brought up the curveball and slider for Giolito, and whether it's about Giolito or other guys, maybe just in general, Ed Farmer talks a lot on the broadcast about, you know, when he was coming up and through the big leagues, there weren't a lot of guys throwing both a curveball and a slider. Feel for one can sometimes throw off feel for another is kind of his contention, and I think others. Do you guys feel that that's a case-by-case basis, or is that something you watch out for on the whole?
It's a case-to-case thing. You know, you want to maximize the pitches that you have and you're most comfortable with. Okay, and now you look at that, you evaluate that. If you feel the need that, okay, we can add a little weapon here. In that case, you know, if you a righty's, you know, trying to find a more effective pitch to kind of get in on lefties, something like that, or away from righties, okay, we start adding a little cutter, slider, something like that. So, you know, it's really kind of how far down the line they are in the development process. You know, because as much you want as many weapons as possible, but certainly there's a, you know, kind of a double-edged sword there. You start adding a fourth pitch and a fifth pitch, you know, it's probably going to minimize, there's going to be a little bit of a hit on something else. So, but for the most part, you know, if a guy we feel is athletic, he can repeat his delivery with those pitches, certainly an added weapon is a positive thing.
So the White Sox have three going to the Futures game, Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech, and Zach Collins. I won't ask you to name a favorite child because that would just be mean, but I've been thinking about Kopech throwing to Moncada with Collins behind the plate as a possibility. Is that something you guys can lobby for, if not just for, you know, something for every White Sox fan to glue in on?
No, that would be awesome to see. I know that pretty much every one of those guys being involved would try to elevate their game. I know that probably Kopech would love something like that and is kind of envisioning that happening. But just to have three guys in the Futures game, it's obviously an honor and kind of a testament to what we're doing here. You know, historically, I couldn't tell you if other organizations have gotten three. I know typically, you know, it's one, sometimes two, and to have three, it's definitely an exciting thing for us.
Where's Zach Collins at this point? You know, the on-base percentage is through the roof. The kid can't stop walking. The hits have come a little bit in the last week. I think he's got five hits in his last week or so. But overall, the average isn't quite there. The power is, the on-base is. Offensively, what are you guys looking at for him at High A Winston-Salem for the rest of the way?
You know, at the end of the year, I think the body to work body work is going to be pretty good. You're going to look up and you're going to see power production on base, you know, runs scored, things like that. And then you obviously put on, you add in the defense and the progress he's made there. You know, average is a finicky thing. It is obviously,
no doubt,
kind of the way defenses are now and the positioning and, you know, so it can be a little bit deceiving. With that being said, just breaking down Collins as a hitter, he's a guy that, you know, timing is going to be a huge part of his future success. And, you know, sometimes he just like everyone else, can be a little bit late, foul some pitches off. But kind of the bonus of that is that he's working the pitcher and he can work some walks. So, but over time, we want him to be able to be in a position to hit and drive the ball more consistently. So those are the things we're focusing on right now. We're certainly not worried at all because this guy, you know, we believe in the makeup. He's very confident in himself. He studies. He looks forward to showing up each day. He's a good teammate. I mean, a guy loves baseball. And a guy that loves baseball and has a good feel for the game, that's a pretty good recipe for success.
When you take a look at some of the is that a part where you get some better data than we all get, whether it's StatCast stuff or TrackMan stuff down in the minor leagues? Is that whether with Collins or with other guys whose average might be a little wonky down there in different ballparks, like do you find do the White Sox have a barrel percentage or do you guys feel more confident looking at some other things that we can't see?
Yeah, I mean, we've obviously got our kind of information systems and, you know, you can look at kind of the basic statistics and then, like I said, you know, how it applies to Collins. You've got a guy that, okay, his batting average. Okay, that's interesting. And then you see the power and the walks. Let's look a little bit deeper. And that's kind of the beauty of what we're being able to be exposed to nowadays with all the different information coming in and what TrackMan's provided us, StatCast and other things. But and let's just look a little bit deeper and you know, and maybe 10 years ago we would look at Collins and, man, this is something to worry about. Where nowadays we're like, okay, you know what? He's actually – there isn't much to worry about here. Yeah, there's some adjustments he needs to make, but there's still so many positives going on. Let's not panic here.
So Mike Rodolfo named Minor League Player of the Month two straight months, June and the last month too. I wonder, you know, with a guy like him who was so young when he was signed to the White Sox, where are the development aspects that you can identify so early on with a player who's like 16, who's 17, 19 perhaps as an international signee that you guys immediately realize, okay, these could be rough, but here are the ways, here are the steps this guy is going to take to get better?
You know, when you get these guys at such a young age, you just need to realize kind of where they're coming from, how young they are, and what they're being exposed to for the first time, you know, culturally, you know, to coming over to the United States and being part of professional baseball, being away from their families, you know, it can take its toll. So you kind of have to have that understanding, you know, this first couple years, let's not necessarily look at the production we're getting from this player. Let's get them comfortable physically and mentally, get them in a good position. And then you hope that the production kind of comes together after that. And to be honest, we're kind of at that point with Mike Rodolfo where we really feel like he's turned the corner. He's starting to become more of a hitter. He's naturally going to be able to drive the ball just because of his size and bat speed. But, you know, it's been exciting to watch this year for me. I know it's been even more exciting for others who have seen him since he was 16, 17 years old.
Last one for you, Chris. I know you got to get out to Miami for the Futures game. That'll be a fun one to watch. I know White Sox fans will have their eyes glued to the TV sets for that. What's the handoff process like between Nick Hostetler and you? Once the draft is done and these guys are assigned and a guy like Jake Berger goes out and hits his first hitter in Arizona, where do you start getting your hands on him and how involved are you with the process through? And, you know, what are your next steps for some of those draftees in 2017 for the White Sox?
Well, the beauty of kind of these draft meetings that we have as an organization is you're getting all the scouts in there. Obviously, Nick is kind of running these meetings and you're putting video up. You're hearing all the discussions. Some of these guys have known these players for years and you hear all these stories. And so you kind of get the history of the player and you get a feel for the player, even though you don't really know the player yet. So when that handoff comes, it's much more of a seamless transition. You know, early on, you know, still you still have those conversations with the scouting department and, hey, what did you see here? What did you see there? You know, we see that he kind of went through a little bit of a skid in college at this point. What was the adjustment there just to kind of help us kind of move the process along? But I think it's obviously very important to keep that open line of communication. I think that's kind of the health of an organization is the scouting and the player development. So it's certainly a point of emphasis here. The better and better we can communicate there, I think the better we're put in these positions to move forward within the organization.
Chris, really appreciate the time, man. Always good talking to you. And the state of the system seems as though it's in, well, it's in pretty good state. So congrats, well done, and enjoy the Futures game, man.
All right, thanks, Connor. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting down there.
The Futures game is Sunday at 3 o'clock. We will keep you posted on what's going on in that ballgame, of course, during the White Sox and Rockies game. Final game before the All-Star break hits tomorrow afternoon. That starts at 2:10. So 3 o'clock will probably be, I don't know, bottom two, something like that. Maybe even the fourth. We'll see. When that Futures game begins, the White Sox have Zach Collins, Michael Kopech, and Zach Collins, Michael Kopech, and Yoan Moncada. Sorry, the list jumped on me there, the old internet. There are two other teams with three players in there. The Houston Astros have Jordan Alvarez. Alvarez probably is actually how you pronounce his name. Alvarez. That's not a name we've never seen before. Come on, Connor. Here it is. Jordan Alvarez, Derek Fisher, and Kyle Tucker for the Houston Astros. And the Milwaukee Brewers have Lewis Brinson, Mauricio Dubon, and Corey Ray. Corey Ray, a Chicago native, a kid who came up out of the ACE program that the White Sox run just a few years ago. He went to Louisville and was the fifth overall draft pick in last year's draft. Corey Ray has made the Futures game, which is he, in and of himself, is just an awesome story and a damn good baseball player, first and foremost. But, you know, coming up out of that ACE program and the Sox knew him well, I would imagine, you know, had Corey Ray by some strange thing dropped down in that White Sox range, things would have been interesting. But Corey Ray, as it was, went fifth overall to the Brewers. We got to take a quick break and come back. We get the 7 o'clock news rolled up. We'll have some good news for you after the 7 o'clock news on Avi Garcia. That's all next. Keep it right here, WLS AM 890.
Surratt Marciano, 10 a.m. to noon weekdays on WLS AM 890. Chicago's news, talk, evolved.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We just wrapped up a conversation with White Sox Director of Player Development, Chris Getz. It was a long conversation, so I've run myself right up into the 7 o'clock news. Mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. However, if you missed part of that interview with Chris Getz, Director of Development for the White Sox, you can head to the internet, WLSAM.com/White Sox. Click on the old podcast link for White Sox Weekly, and you can download all of our episodes so that you can listen to them at your leisure. Or if you want, I don't know why you would, unless maybe you're my mother or something like that, you could listen to them over and over and over and over again. God bless you if you're into that kind of thing. Chris Getz, worth listening to for sure. Really interesting conversation on the evaluation of some White Sox prospects who may be, in fact, playing a little major league ball sooner rather than later. We get a step to the 7 o'clock news. After that, Dan Hayes, CSN Chicago, who is at Coors Field and covering the White Sox and Rockies tonight, will join us and get us the latest from the ballpark. We had some good news for you on the other side of this 7 o'clock news. This is WLS AM 890.
Don't miss a moment of Rush. Noon to 3 weekday afternoons on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We got the White Sox and Rockies coming up in just a few. 7:35, in fact, we'll start the pregame show. Had some good news on Avi Garcia just a few minutes ago. Wanted to bring it to you here. White Sox have tweeted that apparently Ricky Renteria has said it, and we'll talk with Dan Hayes about it, hopefully in just a few minutes here on the show. Avi feeling a lot better today and into tomorrow. That is the report. Avi, of course, with the jammed finger that kept him out of the ballgame last night. He is not in the lineup tonight, but here's the basis of what we're talking about here. Feeling a lot better, likely in tomorrow, more than likely in tomorrow, expected to play tomorrow, and the idea is that he's even available for a pinch hit tonight. So the White Sox All-Star feeling a lot better. And that's a good thing. He'd missed a handful of games, what with the knee issue over the, let's see, that was last week. He missed five in a row, and now today it sounds like that jammed finger's coming around for him a little bit. So that is indeed a good thing. 312-591-8900 is the phone number, or you can hit us on Twitter at C1McKnight. That is the phone number here on the show. Couple of things to do here before we get out. First, we are trying to get a hold of Dan Hayes, who is, going to join us in just a few. I'm going to have to do some little producing here on the show, so give me one brief second, and then okay, there we go. So we're looking for Dan Hayes, and Don has his number now over on his phone. I've just texted it over. We're doing producing right here live on the air. In the meanwhile, I'll tell you this. Sox fans, Wednesday, July 26th at 7:10 p.m., your Chicago White Sox take on the Chicago Cubs. First 10,000 fans will receive a White Sox lunch bag presented by United Airlines. United, proud to fly the Chicago White Sox. Purchase tickets today by visiting whitesox.com or calling 866-SOX-GAME. Also, the first 25,000 fans at each game receive a Mercs. Wait, no, this is only half the read. Well, I'll tell you what. Go to whitesox.com or call 866-SOX-GAME. You can get yourself out to that game on July 26th and be a part of the Sox-Cubs rivalry that is so heated. Got a couple of things for you. The lineup for this evening against the Colorado Rockies is a somewhat typical one. Adam Engel in center field and leading off for the White Sox. Melky Cabrera is in left. Jose Abreu at first. Todd Frazier at third. Yolmer Sanchez at second base. Kevin Smith is going to do the catching. Tim Anderson is at short. Willie Garcia is in right. And Jose Quintana is batting nine and pitching. We will also bring you, we just clipped this off of the old postgame reports. Derek Holland spoke after last night's ballgame and took it on himself. The start that happened last night against the Rockies, four innings and seven runs and two walks, two strikeouts, two home runs. And, you know, he said one thing that I thought kind of struck me some is he's got to go back. What he said, I've got to go back and look at more tape. I've got to go back and work harder to find out what I've been doing wrong, because as he came out of the bullpen last night, again, this is all from Holland last night, and you hear some of this in the pregame show, he was talking with Don Cooper and was talking about how things felt good. Things looked good in the bullpen. Things weren't where that was going into the game, or they weren't what showed up in the ball game last night against the Rockies. So it'd be interesting to see what kind of results that those are a new approach is able to kind of glean for him. Everybody's got 4 days off, and in talking with Coop yesterday too on the pregame show, starters are going to know which game they have coming out of the break. You've got one, you've got two, you've got three, four, five, so forth and so on. And a lot of these guys have a guy that'll catch them maybe once, maybe twice if you're a bullpen guy over the All-Star break. Not all that important to do twice, but definitely once. Get up and throw, keep the arm alive and ready to roll around. But that is kind of the general plan, the general outlook for the White Sox as they lead into the All-Star break. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We are going to real quickly here take a break. When we come back, we will effort to have Dan Hayes of CSN Chicago on the line with us from Denver. That's up next. Keep it right here. WLSAM, this is White Sox Weekly.
Steve Dahl is here. Weekday afternoons, 3 till 7 on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. Let's head out to the phone lines. Dan Hayes, CSN Chicago, joins us on the other side of the line and in Coors Field. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how are you doing, Connor?
Doing fantastic. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it, as always. The news, sir, the latest on Avi Garcia as he rebounds from a jammed finger and the left knee. What's up with Avi?
The left knee is fine. The jammed finger has bothered him a little bit, but it sounds like making progress. I saw him grab a bat in pregame clubhouse today. So Rick Renteria said that he thinks he could be available tonight. Avi yesterday said that he hopes to expect Sunday and definitely expects to be in there for the All-Star game. So, you know, he said there was some inflammation in there, a little bit of inflammation and soreness, but he did it on the second at bat on Wednesday at Oakland. And with treatment, was feeling like it was getting better. So it seemed like it was minor, but at the same time, you never know. And so we should get a better sense when that lineup comes out tomorrow morning.
I know it's always kind of a weird balance guys have to take with the All-Star game. I mean, obviously, it's a huge thing for Avi, you know, coming from where he came from to make this team, but at the same time, he wants to be in there for his club. And it's not just Avi. Other guys who are named to that All-Star team have to balance that, you know, being there for your ball club and then wanting to do this thing that is so important to them. And, you know, the club understands that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a big deal for him. You think about where he's come from and just where he was even at the start of this season, and now all of a sudden, here he gets to go to baseball's biggest showcase on Tuesday night. And they'd love to see himself out there. I remember talking to Jose Quintana last year just about how important it was just in the confidence gained by walking around that clubhouse. And regardless of whether or not he plays, he's going to get that feeling, though, that he belongs, because he is going to be in that clubhouse with all those guys and look over and see all the other stars around the league and know that he belongs there. And I think that's a good thing. But at the same time, he wants to play very much. And he also wants to be ready for the second half. So he has to kind of balance the two. The White Sox have helped him balance that. And obviously this week with the knee, they took it kind of cautiously because they want him to play 75 of the 75 games in the second half.
Dan Hayes, CSN Chicago, joining us here toward the end of White Sox Weekly this evening. Derek Holland was in the clubhouse last night after his start and used some pretty strong terms to describe himself and his outings the last two times. What have you seen from Derek? What have you seen out of him after his starts? Can you put it into context for us, the way he's pitched and the way he's reacted to it, too?
Well, you know, the curveball hasn't been as good lately, it feels like. You just look at it, and that's his pitch, that if the fastball isn't being spotted perfectly, it's going to be a long day. And we saw it last night. He wasn't quite landing those corners with the fastball, and curveball gets hit, and, you know, the slider hasn't been there much. And so it's been a long seven starts, actually. You look back, and I think he started in Detroit June 2nd, and since then he has a 10-13 ERA. And he's a big critic of himself. I mean, he does not miss words on it. And we had to bleep out one. And, mm-hmm. you know, he definitely was upset with himself. And I think that's just realistic for, you know, it doesn't surprise me, I should say, with him. Because, look, this is a big year for him. He's a free agent after this year. Health was the biggest factor for each of the last three seasons. He's got that again, and he wants the results that he had before when he was healthy, and he just isn't having them right now. And to go seven starts like that and have an extended run where he's struggled like this is obviously something that he's kind of dealing with. And he's going to get a couple days off in the break, obviously, the 4 days, and try and regroup and figure it out. But he said he's going to have to go back at video and look to see what he's doing. And it's definitely been a try and run.
I would imagine, Dan, that at the ballpark tonight, since Jose Quintana's pitching for the White Sox, there are a bunch of mid-50-year-old guys with polo shirts that belong to various ball clubs that are tucked into jeans that are maybe a little out of date, but the hell with it. You know, they got other jobs to do. They're looking at ball players. What do you expect the attention to be like for Quintana over his next couple of starts?
Yeah, it'd be pretty full. I think the scout section is full for tonight's game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you'd expect at this point. Jose Quintana, you know, I don't know that it's from results. Of course, you want great results. I don't know if it's huge in the results. I think the important thing for him is to have the stuff that he has had and have that 92-mile-an-hour fastball or 91 spotted on the corners, you know, put the curve in at the right spots, have the changeup they've had. I mean, if those things are there, that's really what's going to determine his value. If he gets hit a little bit and, you know, there's a lot of bloop hits that happen here. There's a lot of games that get out of hand by stuff that a pitcher just can't control. And so I think that everyone kind of takes that into the equation when they look at starts here. I mean, I've been coming here for 11 years and I've never seen, you know, clean baseball here with the exception of a few times. So it's not an easy place to be pitching and it's a tough place to be evaluated. But I think that's probably what guys have to look for is the stuff as opposed to the results, because you can break a bat and give up a bloop single and that little bleeder that gets through the right side. Then all of a sudden you got two guys on. You know, this place is not an easy place to pitch. Obviously, historically, there's a lot of evidence to that. So it'll be interesting. But without question, the next couple starts, the stuff is going to matter a lot and could determine where he ends up.
You know, it's interesting you bring up Coors Field as a tough place to scout. I find it interesting that there are so many guys there right now. I remember it was either in late in high school for me or early college, like 03, 04 kind of range. Ben Sheets, I was up in Milwaukee, and Ben Sheets, he had that, you know, that big curveball, right? But he went up to the Colorado Rockies and he scratched it, didn't throw it, kind of invented a changeup then and there and struck out eight, I think, in that start. He was fantastic. He had to be a completely different guy. Do you talk to
–
have scouts mentioned how difficult it is to see a guy, to actually get a bead on a guy like this?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I imagine they do. I haven't specifically talked to anyone about it just because this is the first time I've been here in like 4 years. But you have to think that because you look at how teams evaluate pitchers in Arizona during spring training. And, you know, they know that, like, for instance, Zach Putnam, when he throws that split finger, it doesn't work in Arizona. Just the dry weather changes it. And I learned that early on in my career that some pitches in some places don't work because of the conditions. So you would have to think if teams are doing that with Arizona for spring training, that they have to be doing the same thing. Scouts would have to be doing the same thing when they look at a start like this place.
So on the flip side of everybody checking out Jose Quintana and seeing what they want to see is a guy like, you know, Chris Getz, who we just had on the show and is headed down to the Futures game in Miami to take a look at some of the young prospects throughout baseball. Obviously, homework has been done on a lot of these guys, but what kind of sense do you get that, you know, from the other side, the White Sox obviously will want to scout some of those young players they might get back if they do move anybody. Is there a lot of action, more action than you're used to seeing on that side of things at this point in the year?
Where the White Sox are scouting guys?
Yeah, taking a look.
I mean, of course, I think that they have to be prepared. They're in a different situation than normal years. So I think in that case, yeah, we saw them do it last year too. At the end of the year, they went out and scouted organizations, you know, and dove into them. And they did the same thing in 2013 when Jake Peavy. I mean, it changes things a little bit because you know what position you're in. And they're fortunate in that regard because they can set it up and say, look, hey, this is what we're going to do. And I think that really helped them with the Red Sox last year, knowing exactly what they wanted out of that trade to dive into the Red Sox the last couple of months of the season, both at the pro level and at the minor league level. And obviously they were very pleased with what they were able to get. I think just, again, knowing where you are, because we look at the standings and there's so much parity around it, and teams just don't know what they're going to do. And knowing what you're going to do gives you an advantage for sure. And I think the White Sox, at least from that regard, are in a pretty decent position.
So, Dan, if you had to write, Dan Hayes, CSN Chicago, here with us for just one more minute. If you had to write the two-sentence approximation of the both – you know, now that we're at the end of the first half, whether the All-Star break or mathematically, if you had to write the two-sentence lead on what has stood out to you most about these White Sox so far, what would you write?
I would write more interesting than I thought they would have been. And that's probably it. Yeah. I mean, just that I think you expected, you know, rebuilds can be really ugly. And at least the offense has shown some signs of life. I mean, you think about the pitching stuff they've gone through and the fact that they've been in games, it's astounding with the injuries they've had that they're not 20 games under right now. I mean, look at all the injuries, bullpen and starting staff. You know, the offense has kept them around and some good young development has happened. So more interesting than I thought they were.
That's a pretty good lead. You should write that up for the All-Star break.
Thanks, Connor.
You got it, man.
I will do that.
Really appreciate you coming on as always and enjoy your All-Star break, my friend.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Dan Hayes, CSN Chicago. You can follow him there online, csnchicago.com. Follow him on Twitter. I think it's CSN Dan Hayes. He is a darn good follow if you're into the White Sox, and I would imagine that if you're listening to the show, you probably are. That does it for us on the show this afternoon. Stay tuned, though. The White Sox pregame show starts at 7:35, so just about 10 minutes from now. I have many thank yous to dole out. Thanks first and foremost to Don Kleppen, our producer. Thanks also to Bill, whose last name is escaping me, works on the morning show and helped us out with Chris Getz's interview. Also, Michael Gray. Well, that's somewhat embarrassing. Bill Hopkins. Sorry, Bill. Couldn't have done it without you. Thanks to Chris Getz. Thanks to Dan Hayes. Thanks to Colin Whitchurch of BP Southside, all for coming on the show. Thanks so much to you for calling and texting. Most of all, thanks for listening. We'll be back next Saturday, of course, and that'll be a whole different look. Sox will have played one game after the All-Star break, the Friday game. And then really, like I said at the top of the show, we're taking off here. I mean, we are, after that All-Star break, taking off to the deadline. It's going to be a fun one. Pre-game show starts in 10. I'm Connor McKnight. You've got WLS AM 890.
been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the proud home for White Sox baseball.